Welcome to Go Home Heat, an NXT podcast. I am flying solo today. My man Justin has family fun to attend to, which is great for him and poopy for me. So we'll dive right into this thing. Birch and Lorcan, Lurch as I like to call them, versus Killian Dane and Drake Maverick in a street fight tag team championship match. And I'm a little confused because this is the second time I've seen a street fight where after the brawling starts to begin with, we turn this thing into an organized, in some way, street fight in which they tag in and out of the ring, which doesn't make sense to me because a street fight, you wouldn't be tagging in and out. However, following some form of rules allows for my eyes to follow action and allows for them to do one thing and it have impact. You know, so it does help with pacing of a match. It doesn't get too cluttered in that way, because these things they're going to fight outside of the ring anyway, and the guys who aren't in the ring are going to wind up fighting, even though neither one of them is eligible for the pin. I would assume the reasoning for the tagging in and out is to determine the eligible person for the pin. But anyway, in the world of kayfabe, whatever. So we wind up with a really brutal match where we have the belt whipping spots and all the good tables, ladders, chairs, all that stuff happen. No, not ladders. But anyway, I loved it. It was brutal. And then we get Drake isolated eventually. He does fight from... Dane looks like a monster. Drake does fight from down under a little bit. He utilizes the low blow after having been whipped to get the belt and get an exact revenge on his tormentors for just a moment. And that kind of worked for the whole thing in general. But of course, eventually with Drake isolated, he succumbs to the Lorcan and Birch, and they maintain for Lorcan and Birch to finally get this chance in the sun after years of being, before they got into this program where that eventually put them on top recently, I never thought of them as anything more than they're going to be the guys that somebody beats on the way to the title, or they're going to lose the title matches. And that's a shame because they're fantastic workers, and this has allowed them to be in the spotlight. And once they got there, they haven't relinquished it. And I'm very happy for those guys. Isaiah Scott and Isaiah Swerve Scott, newly healed, versus Jake Atlas. Scott wrestled the whole match physically, arrogantly, and that allowed for... He's going to be so good as a heel, and he's already a great wrestler. His moveset is wonderful. And so when he gets in there with a guy like Atlas who can slap go too, this is a rematch as well. It just shows. And they gave him time to do their thing. Jake is great. And the difference between the last match they had, Scott dominated the match, but lost on a surprise kind of finish thing. And Jake and Swerve was upset about that. This time around, Scott doesn't dominate as much because Atlas knows he belongs now. And he gives Scott the business every now and then, but obviously Scott can sort of change the tides due to the fact that he is uber talented and also willing to kind of do things in the breaks that are not good guy stuff. He's vicious in this thing. Atlas eventually goes for the cartwheel DDT. Scott kicks him off. That leading to a confidence boot by Scott, and he goes over. And now we're one and one against each other. Atlas has won on a flash. Scott has won, alluding to his new character. I would like for this to keep going for a little bit. I think Atlas, these guys are both, this cruiserweight division is fantastically talented. And them putting these guys on, and I think Atlas and Scott will wrestle above cruiserweight. They'll wrestle all the way up North American title picture, heavyweight title pictures eventually. But I want to see these two guys get where they're going together, because I feel like they're perfect to counter each other in the ways that they wrestle. And they're both really talented. And then, of course, Atlas probably winds up going back into a program with Escobar at some point. Moving right along to Dakota Kai versus Rhea Ripley in what is... Boy, these two guys can wrestle each other well. This is so good. This is the, probably, to me, the best booked wrestling division in all of scripted athletic endeavors. The best division in all of scripted athletic endeavors. And we get ourselves quite a little banger here. Kai takes the early beating. She's smaller. She's going to have to wear Rhea down to get to her. Rhea on the outside of the ring misses a slam onto the apron, which Kai then turns into a standing shoulder breaker on Rhea. And that forces Rhea to be on the defensive, and she winds up selling for Dakota for a while here. Dakota hits what is probably my favorite move right this second in pro wrestling, which is her rolling backstabber. It has that Canadian Destroyer feel when Petey Williams started doing it in TNA. And it looks vicious. I call it the Sunset Backstabber because it reminds me of Sunset Flip, but I'm not the one who gets to name these things. Eventually, Rhea manages to power out of a few arm bars, gets the power bomb, and then she does get a standing cloverleaf in there. When that happens, this is prior to what I was just talking about. She gets a standing cloverleaf. That allows us to tell the story because Gonzalez comes out to the ring and stares. She's been banned from ringside, so Dakota's had to be on her own. Rhea invites her down, but she waits. Dakota, of course, manages to get to the rope. We break. Then she winds up getting... Eventually, she winds up getting Rhea into an armbar. But Rhea manages to power out by turning that into a slam and then turning that into a standing... into her riptide, which finishes the match off. And then, as I said, Rhea has been inviting her all along to the ring. Raquel Gonzalez obliges, walks down the runway, gets into the ring. The referees all stand around outside screaming, pleading, don't touch each other, don't touch each other, as the announcers are dripping with anticipation because, of course, they want them to touch each other. And they get into a fight right there, and the refs are, you know, 6-7 people unable to separate them. They do a great job of making this look legit. These girls are... they're both right around 6 foot. They're both very strong. Rhea may have the best shoulders in the business. And Raquel is just as formidable, physically imposing. And this was just really well done and gets you set up for their fight at New Year's Evil, which I'm really excited for that. I might be more excited for that than I am for the Toni Storm, Io Shirai match. But speaking of which, we'll slide into that. Toni Storm discusses that she has an upcoming match with Io. She reminds you that she beat Io on her way to the finals of the Mae Young Classic. She's doing so much better as a heel. It's easier to identify with her as an arrogant... Because we're all arrogant, right? No. But because it's just... I think sometimes it's just easier for people to be what they're not. And to if you get to go out there and play arrogant... It's easy. The pressure's off. You're not having to be yourself. You can kind of dive into something and be a little, say things you maybe tongue in cheek you always wanted to. And so she gets rolling. Not that she's a bad person. It's fun. You know, it's fun to say things say mean things in the car when you're driving. Everybody does it. Instead, Io's furious at what Toni says about, you know, her being afraid to fight Toni. So Io marches to the ring, throws her chair. Well, actually, first we get a First we get a Bronson Reed match with a guy I really like. He reminds me of JTG a lot, and I think he probably wants to. Ashante the Adonis, but the poor guy is in the wrong place at the wrong time. The monstrous Bronson Reed with the Godzilla entrance comes to the ring, and he gets to do a squash match on old boy. And Bronson is very good. I love him to death. I want him to do well, but it was kind of rough watching him just squash this poor guy that I think has some potential, But we did not get to see that here. But, you know, these things happen. And so, back to after that match is over, Io storms to the ring, grabs a chair, puts it in the middle of the ring, and she awaits Toni Storm because we're going to do this now in her mind. But instead, Mercedes Martinez, who seems to have been freed from Monday night's Reckoning program and is now back, jumps Io and beats her up really good and manages to throw her through the front of the announcer's table, which I did not realize the front of the announcer's table was that thin of a wood. But it looked vicious. It looked good. Mercedes is awesome. And we have set up the next two challengers to Io Shirai's title reign, which, again, that's great, right? You got two challengers to the title reign, and then you have Rhea and Gonzalez in a feud against each other. And the winner of that feud will be the one after that. So we've already progressed, like I said, the best book division out there. We know what's going on, and they're fighting to separate themselves to get a shot at a champion. Timothy Thatcher has a message for Tommaso Ciampa, and he would like to invite him ringside to watch as he pummels Leon Ruff into submission. Puts a chair out as toucheing the fact that that's what Ciampa did before one of their matches. Leon comes to the ring. Leon, the diminutive one, takes a beating while Tommaso constantly plays to Ciampa, whom isn't there. He hasn't showed up, but he's still playing to the, because he knows that Ciampa's watching. And Ruff absorbs the punishment and manages to get an inside cradle win over the grappler. So he gets a grappling move finish win over the wrestling specific grappler guy. And that's kind of neat, because the whole reason that happens is because Thatcher isn't paying attention to the match. A couple of episodes ago, Thatcher did a whole segment where he was trying to teach his underlings in the Thatcher's Thatch Can segments how to deal with distractions, and telling them the reason why they lose is because they deal with distractions improperly. Now here we go. He was unable to deal with the distraction that he personally created, costing him the match. He's so furious, he goes for Leon. Leon is a slippery one, as we know, and he slides away. He runs up the ramp to get away, and Tommaso comes down because, by golly, this is going to be a fair fight. The doggone Thatcher screwed up again. He's caught up in the ropes. Boom, DDT. And Thatcher's out, and Ciampa walks away, and Ciampa lets him know that they're going to fight in the fighter's pit at New Year's Evil. And this New Year's Evil is looking like it's going to be a heck of a free show. The fighter's pit segments that Thatcher had with the match he had in the fighter's pit with Riddle was amazing. And I just, I can't imagine that the Ciampa match is going to be worse. I assume it'll be better. A lot of times, I tell you what, let's go in a different direction. Threads for the show. The Gargano Christmas was a thread throughout the show. Periodically, we would cut to the Gargano household. Christmas decorated under the tree, and you had Candice LeRae, you had Indy Hartwell, you had Austin Theory, and of course Gargano dressed in a Christmassy suit, filming the whole thing for our enjoyment. A couple takeaways here. Theory is either quite thick-headed for a muscle man, or he is an incredible actor. Johnny gives him whey protein because their faction is now called The Way, and because, as I said, Austin is quite thick-headed, it is Johnny Gargano's own whey protein mix, which I don't think is available in stores. You have to know him, I believe. Gargano gives Hartwell a present, and she receives a empty box for the new, I think, PS5 is what that was. She was incredibly happy. I could have got that wrong. I'm not as great with the gaming industry as some are. And sidebar, my son Ray hates it when I use the term gaming or gamer. He gets very mad. Okay, but we'll move back to this. So she gets an empty box, a little bit dejected, and Johnny explains that he gave her that because he wanted her to know that what he's giving her is actually better than that, because the Gargano household is incredibly happy with Indy and they want her to take on the family moniker. So Johnny Wrestling is now anointing her Indy Wrestling. And guys, that's gold. Okay, to have a character on your show called Indy Wrestling is so good. Especially it's when a guy like Johnny, who toiled in the indies for years and years and years, and is still, people still kind of, people love, I think people think Johnny's one of the best wrestlers in the world, but also a lot of people think that he, I mean, I call him Johnny Kickout because his matches, you know, anyway, can mirror some of the things you'll see in the indie circuit, but just like great. And indie wrestling is awesome, guys. First of all, whether you're talking about going to your local armory, or you're talking about going to a big city where it's a little bit better, it's awesome. A little bit where the income is better for the kids, for the performers. Not necessarily the wrestling. I'm not being critical of your local armory. I love going to the fairgrounds and watching the local wrestling we have here in Pensacola. It's just then he got the Poison Pixie, Candice LeRae. He got her own piece of Shotzi's tank memorabilia. If you remember, Shotzi's tank was destroyed by Candice LeRae. It took him 18 hours to find that piece of tank for her, and he's a wonderful man. So that was one thread that rolled through the show. Kyle O'Reilly versus Finn Balor was a thread that ran through the show. That's coming up at New Year's Evil, and they reviewed their match, and it is a match of the year candidate. So it was neat to see how they talked about it, because O'Reilly spoke highly of Finn, but basically was kind of saying it's a matter of time before I beat you. You know, you got lucky when you beat me. I broke your jaw. Everybody knows I broke your jaw. You were the one who was on the shelf, not me, when the match was over. You may have got the 1-2-3, but I was the one who imposed his physical will in the fight. And Finn kind of acknowledges that in a way, which was interesting to me, because he says, you know, nobody remembers who even won the match. They just remember how brutal it was, and that I was, and that I got my jaw broken three places, and I have, you know, three plates in my jaw now. And I thought this was great, and I cannot wait to see these guys mix it up at the pay-per-view. Should be amazing. But also, what winds up happening here, how it contributes to the rest of the show in a thread form, is later you have Roddy Strong and Adam Cole talking up this fight that they're not involved with backstage, and Velveteen Dream rolls up on them and says, hey, you know, how the mighty have fallen. Velveteen Dream had feuded with Cole at one time over the belt, and now, of course, Cole not being involved in the title picture anymore, Velveteen says to Roddy, you know, I guess you knew all along that he wasn't really that Cole wasn't really the leader of the faction. And, of course, that gets a slap to the face, and Cole insists that he is in no way jealous of Kyle O'Reilly for challenging for the belt that he had held for the better part of the last, you know, 2 years. And it was a good segment, and it got us into some. Obviously, guys, it's always weird when Dream's involved in something, and we kind of understand that. And I don't know that I've ever really like addressed it. I don't know that I ever will. But it's hard to see him in a program and not, because if you do like me and you kind of follow along on Twitter as you're watching these shows, or you kind of, I can't help it. I think it's part of the international wrestling community experience, is to read things that frustrate you and side up, and I get frustrated with the venom that goes back and forth, but by the same token, I go to it and I read it. I find a handful of accounts that I enjoy, but you can't have Twitter without them going crazy whenever Velveteen shows up. And even if they didn't do that, it's still, when you look at him, the first thought that comes to your mind every time is something that's terrible. And so that's tough. Now we're going to go on from that. But I did feel like I should probably run that out there. So I did. I ran it out there. Dream Priest versus Karrion Kross promo. Video to hype their match. And this is another little sidebar thing that happens over this. Both do great in these backstage talking environments. Damian Priest is a very good, calm speaker. He does well. And then, of course, Karrion Kross, the reason he's here is that he's a great speaker. He's a great wrestler, but the reason he's here and they were so high on him is that he is a great preacher. Well, he sounds like a preacher. He brings it. Fire and brimstone. And the end is near, and Scarlett comes in to finish it up with a the end is near promo and then a Karrion Kross tick-tock, tick-tock. Another thing that's going on here, and that's going to be great as well, that matchup. Zia Lee and Boa, we cut to a thing of them also during the show. A lot happens in 2 hours on NXT, guys. And the Dragon Woman's face painted up, and these guys are ready. They have been tortured. They have been trained while being tortured. The Elder is telling them now to stop instead of telling them one more. The transformation has formed, and I've seen a million of these rebuilds. Being a wrestling fan since 79, but being able to remember being a wrestling fan since about 83. I've seen a lot of these rebuilds or vignettes to bring in Kamala, the Ugandan giant, or whoever over the course of time, the warrior, whatever it is. And these, when they have to repackage a person to be a different style of character, a lot of times, more times than not, they get it right on the repackaging. It's the way it's booked afterwards that matters. And right now, these kids are set up to glow. And Zia Lee is walking into the best division in pro wrestling, the best booked division in pro wrestling. And I would assume they're going to book her right, and this is going to work. But there's a question of who does she go over? Who can she? Who does she beat? Do you let her beat Ember Moon? Do you let her beat Toni Storm, who's in a program with your champ? Do you let her beat, you know, she's probably physically, like in real life, she's a martial artist. She probably physically would be tough for any of them to handle. But optically, since it's scripted, optically, her looking up at a Rhea Ripley, a Gonzalez, a Mercedes Martinez, all of which are 5'11", 6 foot, it'll look strange, you know. But hey, it looks strange when Kurt Angle put it on The Undertaker, but we all knew that in real life, Kurt Angle could put it on The Undertaker. There's a story there. The story goes something along the lines that Triple H didn't believe Kurt Angle should be the world champ because nobody would believe it because he's so small. And Vince said, just point blank to Triple H, if the story I've heard is true, could he beat you up? And Triple H was like, well, of course he could. And that Vince was like, well, then that's enough. You know, I mean, if it really could happen, then maybe we should allow it to happen on our shows, right? Now, Michael Bivens says Tyler Rust is ready for the star treatment, and he is, after pushing Tommaso Ciampa to the limit, nobody has ever done this before, which, of course, people have, but that's how you do it. And Michael Bivens does a good job here setting up Tyler Rust versus Ari Daivari. And this was excellent. Daivari is a fantastic worker. He does well on 205. I recommend you watch 205 sometimes if you get a chance. It's a great show. Just wrestling. That's all you're getting. And just quick, fast wrestling. That's all you get there. And I love that stuff. And this is Russ's second outing, and he is able to showcase his feet and his feet, and he's able to showcase the groundwork, which is really what's going to separate. In this day and age, you have to be able to get in and out of holds seamlessly to be the kind of guy people want to watch. That's what you want to see when you watch pro wrestling now. You want to see a guy that can mit. UFC changed the game of pro wrestling because it showed us all that size doesn't necessarily matter. And before there were weight divisions, you're probably most of you too young to remember this. They used to have these UFC. Dana White changed the game because he created rules that made UFC look, and it is a sporting event now. And it is two men or females figuring out what style of wrestling is the best style. And they mix these wrestling, it's mixed martial arts. They mix these different styles together. And the way they do that decides the victor. Before, though, you could see a guy like one of the Gracies would get in the ring with a guy 200 pounds bigger than him, and you'd be like, well, he's going to get killed. And he snaps an elbow. And Gracie snaps the larger man's elbow. And it was always the craziest thing to see, because you'd see matches where a guy would come at him, and he would just, and a Gracie would just fall on the ground. So he'd be like, come on in and get in my guard, and it's over. You know, and it's so. Now, when two guys wrestle, you have this equalizer, especially in pro wrestling, you have this neat little equalizer that if you can do holds, it used to be the little guy, if he was going to win, had to go to the ropes. He had to do the drop kicks. He had to fly. Now, you've created multiple ways to tell a story and to write a plot of a match. And that is awesome. But in order to do that, you have to be able to do all these different mat wrestling techniques, and Tyler can do these things. So it winds up being like, this is a neat little match, like I said, getting back to what's important, which this is a match. And he puts him in a hold they call, they didn't give it a name. It was a pretzel looking thing where he had both his legs around his arms pulling it back. It looked like his rotator cuffs were about to completely, Daivari's rotator cuffs were about to completely give way there. He winds up tapping or screaming, let me go, whatever. They got to call it the Rustic something, right? His name's Tyler Rust. But anyway, good little debut for this kid. He's on his way. He's not a kid. 15 years in the indies. And like we said, we love indie wrestling. Okay, let's move on to Adam Cole versus Velveteen Dream. And what is fantastic? Say what you want. Velveteen can wrestle his butt off. And it was a great match. And Cole is a good storyteller. They didn't. Sometimes with Cole matches, sometimes with Gargano matches, I can get a little bit. There can be too many shots to the head and it not really affect it. They've stayed away from that as much lately. If you're going to do that, I don't mind it when wrestling mimics the gaming industry more than it mimics combat. It used to really bother me as an older guy. It doesn't so much now, but I do like to save those moments for pay-per-views because that, or for special events, title matches, that kind of thing, because in a way that shows you how important that match is. You get little shenanigans as Pete Dunne comes down and attacks Roddy outside of the ring, but that doesn't really affect the match that much. And the finish was nice and clean. Cole hits Dream with two super kicks to the head, running knee, boom, 1, 2, 3. Great show. They wrapped it up nice for us. They did a great job of heightening the importance of this New Year's Evil Wednesday. I'm assuming because it's right after New Year's, they're planning on trying to reboot the whole thing by giving us a pay-per-view or special event quality show on a Wednesday night, and I appreciate it, and it's going to be great. I love this show. I love NXT. I want to take the time to wish you all a happy holiday. I hope you had a good Christmas. I hope you will have a good New Year's. I hope you will find you some wrestling you enjoy. Stick with it. I really want to take a second to thank Charles Gibson, thank the Gen Project for coming along and helping us out. I want to thank Steven Anderson for creating our website. I want to thank Haley and Nick and Ray and Jared and Justin who have come in here and put in work for fun. And we're having a blast doing this. I hope that next year is great for y'all. I hope that we get to keep doing this, and I hope that we can expand and do more stuff and have more fun. And I want to maybe bring a few more voices in and enjoy that, as well as underlining how special these neat people are that have jumped into our world here. So for the Go Home Heat, this is KP signing off. Copyright 2020. Go home.